after all the things finally sorted out, it turned out that his back and neck are fine, or at least not the reason why they thought it was. Is, as someone stated, it's because his medication he takes for his cancer treatments has been giving him trouble. So he still has the pain, it's just that he's not going to have surgery. I have to admit, as just seeing Richard this morning, I remember, how many of you remember Don Lindsay? Don Lindsay came, I forgot where he was from. I might have been Lindsay, California. He was the fellow who came and preached here about three or four different times. And he was a paraplegic in a wheelchair. And if you remember back then, is he had an assistant who traveled with him, and when it came time to preach, his assistant would physically pick him up and lift him out of the chair and lock his knee braces in so that he could stand up behind the podium to preach. And if you've ever had anything like that in your family or anything like that, some of you might remember FDR, that he went through a lot of issues like that. You know how painful it is. It is extremely painful, almost agonizing to go through that. And yet, Don Lindsay was by far the most cheerful, joyful person. I mean, you that verse we have in Philippians, rejoice in the Lord always, and I will get, and I will say rejoice. And a lot of times we say that, we add the caveat, well, sometimes it's hard to rejoice, and we know that. Don Lindsay showed us, was one by his example of Christ in his life, showed us of what it meant to live that, it means to live that verse. And I can't help but think that when I see Richard too, as he's one, those of you that know him know of the physical and medical problems he's had these past years. And yet his outlook is still very positive. He's still, in fact, he did ask to be remembered by each of you. And him and the family seem to be doing okay. But any time you get up and you have to lean against something in order to be able to stand up to say what you want to say, is you know that you're having some issues. And yet, in spite of all that, he keeps a very positive outlook. I told this to start off this morning, and it's about a young boy who is late coming into Bible class. And he's not usually late, so the teacher asks him, says, Jimmy, says, you're normally on time. How come you're half an hour late this time? He says, what happened? And Jimmy says, well, he says, I went fishing, he says, but my dad said I had to go to church. And the teacher said, well, you know, that's pretty impressive of your dad. He said, did he tell you about how you needed to come to church to become a better Christian, and how it was good for you to be in church? He said, no. He said, Dad said I had to come because they only had enough bait for one person. When we think of Father's Day, as we think of fathers as our example, and yet we understand that some fathers just aren't an example, and I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end. But reality, what we're talking about applies not just to fathers, not just to men, but applies to everybody, and that is the idea of integrity. Now, integrity, unfortunately, is something that is taken usually at face value, but oftentimes is looked down on in today's society. It almost goes back to the old Roman days. There was a Roman senator named Cato. And in one of his quotations, Cato said that the Romans loved the virtue of integrity, but thought that there was a virtue best observed in other people. You understand what he's saying, of course, don't you? Is that it's fine for you to do it, but I don't want it for myself. And unfortunately, that's the way today's society functions. That's the way they act. Is far from having integrity, is it's no longer the case that when you give somebody your word that is your bond, that you intend to follow through on that. And unfortunately, today, as we see a lot of that coming out in our society, way back in the 90s, though, there was a survey that was done, and they asked a bunch of people, they said, basically, what would you do, or what wouldn't you do for $10 million? And one of the questions they asked, for instance, is for $10 million, would you abandon your family? Now, you would hope that that would be a fairly low percentage, wouldn't you? It was 28%. 28% in the 90s of those responded. I'm going to venture to say, if we were to ask that in California today, they would probably be higher than that. But there are some other things too. For instance, how many would give up their American citizenship? That was 26%. How many would leave their spouses? How many would perjure themselves and let a murderer go free? It was actually 10% would do that. And get this, how many would murder a stranger? 7% of those responded said that they would happily murder a stranger for $10 million. Well, 7 out of 10 is about 1 out of 10. So you figure that it's about 8% using my Lompoc High School math. About 8%. Well, there's about 20 of us in this room, so that means 2 of you. I'm just kidding. But you kind of get the idea. The people you walk in around with, these are the people that we interact in our society with. And the reason I bring this out is it brings to mind that, and I've said this verse a couple times the last few weeks, when Peter said that they just don't understand why we refuse to join in with them, and I'll use the King James terms for it again, why we refuse to join in them with their dissipations. Now, when you say I like the word dissipation. But when you think of it, think partying. In other words, what it really comes down to, though, is they don't understand how come we don't think the way they do in the world. How come we don't act the way they do in the world? Well, of course, the reason we don't act the way they do in the world is because we're not thinking like they do in the world. Our thought processes are different. It's because Jesus is not in their thinking. They come to different conclusions, and that leads them to different consequences. When we talk about the idea of integrity, go back to Chicago in 1929. How many of you remember Elliot Ness? Now, some of you say you knew him personally. I'm going to be in trouble. Elliot Ness in 1929 was just starting off. Matter of fact, that was the very first year that he was assigned to the FBI in the city of Chicago. And his job there was to, well, technically, it catches all bootleggers, but he was specifically targeted onto Al Capone. And he had an elite team of 9 men that were formed specifically to bring down Al Capone's hundreds of millions of dollar empire. Now, you think hundreds of million dollars. Well, today, I mean, we've got people that have billions of dollars. You got to think, though, 1929. $200 million in 1929, it would be a couple billion dollars today. But Elliot Ness, in 1929, when he first went to Chicago, you know how old he was? He was 26 years old. He had 2 young children. And you know how much riches, how much payment he received for the job that he did in 1929? In 1929, he received the princely sum of $2,800 that year as an FBI agent. And in that year, one of Al Capone's associates walked into his office after he'd been there a few months and put an envelope on his desk that had $2,500 bills in it. Basically, here's a year's worth of wages. If only you leave Al Capone alone. Now, if you know your history, how did Elias respond to that? Well, if you know your history, you know that he actually held a press conference. Not to say he was backing off of Al Capone. He held a press conference to say specifically that here's what Al Capone's band just tried to bribe me with, and I'm not going to back off of him. Matter of fact, it was then that they coined the term. He said, me and my men are, and you probably heard this term in the movies at least, me and my men are untouchable. And when he said that, he didn't mean you can't kill us. What he meant is we're not going to be bribed. We're not going to go away. Let me ask you, you think that sort of thing would happen in today's society? You know, there are good people. There are people with integrity. When Jesus said to let your light so shine before men, and he says specifically that they may see your good works. What are good works? Is it, I see that you need some food, so I'm going to bring you over some food? Well, of course that's a good work. But you know what? Is that the limit to it? Are there other things that are also good works? Is not integrity a good work? Remaining true to your ideals, are those not good works? You see, there's actually a message. Remember, I gave that, what Cato said back in Roman days, that integrity was a virtue best observed in others. And yet, you know what? Even in spite of all of that, he was forced to admit that it was an admirable virtue. In other words, that it was a good thing. We have today, we look at the deeds of the flesh in Galatians 5 versus the fruit of the Spirit. You know, there's a whole lot of people that they may not be cheering for the deeds of the flesh and wondering about how great they are, but it sure seems like it by their lives. And then they look at the fruit of the Spirit, things like patience and kindness. Unfortunately, we live in a society in which kindness is equated to weakness. But as Christians, our morals, our ideals must remain untouchable, to use that term, even by the corrupt culture, the corrupt world that we find ourselves in. And that's because as Christians, we need to be people with integrity, because by having integrity, we not only please God, but we also will shine out among those that we come in contact with. For no other reason, those people in the days of Cato with integrity did. Because it's so different from what they're used to, that they're going to see that, and they are going to glorify our Father in heaven. In Proverbs chapter 2, verse 7, it says that God stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield for those who walk in integrity. I don't know if you've ever been to England or know someone who's from England. I've got a friend from Wales. And it's not really a state the way we think of it, but it's a region in England. And the last time I saw Clint is he was in Las Vegas. Now, if you've been to Las Vegas, it gets pretty hot there. Matter of fact, we were there in June. It gets pretty hot. It gets pretty warm in Las Vegas in June. And yet, when I saw Clint, he was carrying an umbrella with him. And when I asked him about it, I says, I know you've got pasty skin. I says, but come on. I says, you really think that umbrella's going to hold back the sun? He says, no, this is in case it rains. I says, the forecast didn't say anything about rain. He says, oh, but in England, we don't believe in the forecast. He said, the forecast is always wrong in England, so everybody, he says, carries an umbrella. You know what? Remember that verse that says the devil goes about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour? When is the lion most dangerous? Let me ask you this. If you hear him roaring, can't you hear him coming? You know when the lion is the most dangerous? What does a lion do? What does a big cat do? Well, a little kitty cat for that matter. What do cats do when they spot prey, they stalk it. They get quiet, don't they? And they sneak up on you until what? Until the right time to strike. Now, if you remember that armor of God in Ephesians, remember it says we need to take the shield of salvation to do what with? Or it said to quench the fiery darts of the devil. Let me ask you, what happens if you know you're about to get showered with fiery darts, is you're going to want to have your shield, right? But our enemy knows this. And so he's not going to wait for us to pick up the shield when it comes time to target us. Is he's going to wait for us to get complacent? He's going to wait for us to put it down? And then he's going to attack us. Then that lion is going to strike. What's my point in all this? Is integrity isn't something that we put on and off. It's like being in Christ. Is there's not a certain day of the week or a certain time that we do it. Is we need to have Christ on us at all times. Remember it says, those of you who have been baptized have what? Have put on Jesus Christ. Is we need to have that with us at all times, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to resist the devil's attacks. But you know, one other thing with the shield, though, and it kind of corresponds to what we talk about, the being in Christ, is if we were to substitute the word completeness, he said, Proverbs 2:7, that he is a shield to those who walk in integrity. If we were to say he's a shield to those who walk in completeness, or those who walk in Christ, what does it mean to walk in Christ? Well, Colossians chapter 2, verse 10 says that in Christ we are, and some of the versions are going to use, perfect. But you know that in the New Testament, perfect is used in different ways. Sometimes perfect means perfection. But most of the time, what does it really mean? It's the idea of completeness. So in Colossians 2:10, the idea here is that we are made complete in Christ. In Jesus we are complete. But what does that mean? What's the flip side of that? Well, without Christ in our life, there's something missing. And that's because everything we have is a result, these spiritual blessings are a result of having Christ in our life. And so it's when we clothe ourselves with the completeness that God offers that we are going to be able to resist those fiery darts of the devil. And you know, when we walk in that integrity, then God really will be our shield, as he said in that verse in Proverbs. And so we, as Christians, we can walk in integrity at all times, but it's that integrity that comes by being followers, by being disciples of Jesus Christ. And Proverbs 20, verse 7 sums it up for us. He says, a righteous man who walks in integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. And one of the things I talked about this morning is with regards to Father's Day, is, you know, there's a lot of people that maybe don't celebrate it quite like others do. As I said earlier, maybe they feel that their father wasn't the best. But you know, for all of us, no matter what circumstance we find ourselves in, is we need to remember that we have a Father in heaven who does all things well. And as he has told us, as Jesus told us, he will never leave us nor forsake us. But you know, as part of that here in this earth, is that means is we, if we want to be able to resist temptation, if we want to be people of integrity, how do we do it? We do it by remaining in Christ. So with those thoughts, the lesson is yours tonight. If you do need to come forward, whether it be for prayers or for whatever reason, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and we sing.